All right, guys, welcome to another episode of the Brooklyn Boxing Podcast. I'm here with former undefeated heavyweight boxer Joe Macy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Pat. It's good to be with you.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on. I know things are crazy, and you know, I appreciate you taking some time to hop on the show today.
Well, we've all got a little extra time these days, but and we've all been doing a lot of Zoom meetings, so I thought, why not talk a little boxing and have some fun for a bit?
Yeah, appreciate it, man. So, you know, the last time we talked, you know, I you know, remember, of course, kind of your story a little bit getting into boxing. You were a little bit of a late bloomer, but if you wanted to kind of jump into that and talk about your start in Buffalo, I think it was your brother or maybe your dad who got you into boxing. I know you're a family of fighters.
Well, we're a family. Yeah, my grandfather and uncle were the boxers. Grandfather, I'm talking in the 20s, my uncle in the 60s. So my brother and I were always drawn to boxing because we loved, you know, hearing their stories, reading their clippings. We knew they loved boxing. They made us love boxing. And, you know, we never thought we'd be boxers. We just liked it. You know, we were the guys that hosted the pay-per-view fights at our house. My brother and I were fans of the sport because of our family's past. But it wasn't until after high school, my brother and I were decent athletes, but and then, you know, things diminished after high school. We're in college, and my father was a police officer. He was the one that wasn't the boxer, but he said, let's go to, why don't you guys go to the police athletic league gym and kick each other's brains out there. It's free. I'm a police officer. I mean, you guys are beating each other up in the basement, you know? And so we did. And so it wasn't until after high school, God, I was 18 or 19, that I ever put gloves on. And it wasn't in the intent to become an Olympian or an undefeated contender. It was really just to have some fun and see what I had. And, I didn't have much, to be honest. I wasn't that good. So my brother was always the better natural athlete than I was. And so he was looking pretty good. And I just went to get my butt kicked and fool around. But we started taking some amateur fights, and I knew I was tough, so I was winning these fights, and I was winning more and more fights, and then a Golden Gloves, and it just kept kind of snowballing. And every time I look back in my career to a certain time, it just kept snowballing to where I couldn't kind of get out, and it led me to, I mean, right to the end of my career, so that it became my life and lifestyle. It really happened fast. I mean, by the time I was 24 or 5, I'm an Olympian on the 96 team as an alternate. I mean, that's pretty fast, you know? So, you know, it all happened right before my eyes.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, to rewind a little bit, like, I'd like to, if you could kind of take me inside that gym that you started in. I'd imagine it was sort of a classic kind of gritty feel to it. You know, there's so many, there's a lot of kind of classic gyms like that in Brooklyn as well. So I'd love to have you sort of take me inside of that gym, and people listening could kind of feel what it would be like to be in there.
I mean, grungy, as you can imagine. There are a few nice boxing gyms today. They've come a long way in Buffalo. But back then, it was kind of the demise of the sport. You know, Buffalo has a lot of rich boxing history. I don't think people know that. We've had 6 former world champions. Granted, it's been a long time. But, you know, in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, boxing was very rich. A lot of great fighters, a lot of boxing action. The old War Memorial Stadium would sell out for Golden Gloves. I mean, it was just a popular sport. And when you were a Golden Gloves competitor, you were like a celebrity in the city of Buffalo back in the 50s, 60s. It was just a great sport here then. 70s, 80s, it had a little pulse, but it died a bit. And, you know, in the 90s, there wasn't much action. So there's a few boxing gyms around. And I'd like to think that I take a little credit for kind of reviving it a little bit in Buffalo with the help of my team, of course. But, you know, grungy little boxing gyms that we'd float around here in South Buffalo. And then we, you know, we shoot down to Syracuse and Albany and make little weekend road trips to get some fights. But, you know, it wasn't until like my second year, I won a Golden Gloves And I learned, well, geez, they fly me and to go to the National Golden Gloves. I said, wow, this is going to be so fun. I can't believe I'm getting to go to Boston, Massachusetts for a fight that, you know, just because I won the gold. I mean, I'm going to get my butt kicked. I know it, but it's going to be fun. And I'm, you know, they're paying, and I can't believe I'm getting a road trip like this. And I was just a kid. And I remember going there and thinking, you know, you got to win like six nights in a row. They're tough amateur tournaments, you know, and I kept winning. And I remember going into the ring and coming out, they'd raise my hand. The crowd would almost be silent. Be like, who is this kid? Like, does he even know who he just beat? And I'd be like, no, I have no idea. And this next night, the same thing would happen. And following night, the same thing would happen. Like, he beat a guy who's been around for 5 or 6 years. And I think, Pat, had I known more, or if I had I known about these guys, I would have probably psyched myself out. I just was that naive and that stupid. I remember fighting guys like Lance Whitaker and Tommy Martin and guys that...
Well, I was going to mention here, you beat Haseem Rahman, right?
I beat Haseem Rahman. He was one of them, you know, where I stopped Rahman. And I remember the crowd kind of being quiet, like, who is this guy? And I'd be like, why is everyone so... I don't know who this
guy
is.
How did that fight play out?
God, that was an Empire State Games fight.
You didn't really know much about him. I don't know if he had buzz then, but...
He was making a buzz. He was with Rooney at the time, and I was just starting to a little bit, and I stopped him. I think it was second or third round, and we fought a couple more times. He beat me once, I beat him again. So we had this nice little amateur rivalry. He's a great guy. I love Rock. But again, I guess that's just, I didn't know anything about these guys. And I guess that being naive was a good thing, and it helped me, because I really would have been way more intimidated had I known about their pasts, had I known that a lot of these guys have been boxing since they were 9 years old. And it really, I had that in my favor, because I wasn't good. You know, I really wasn't skilled. I was just tough. Any skill that I did obtain came much later when I met my trainers, Juan De Leon and Carlos Sugar De Leon, who, rest in peace, just passed. But those guys I found a little bit later in my amateur career, and they really honed some skill in me to go along with the toughness. But really, it's all I had. You know, it was a little toughness.
Yeah, and I'd imagine, you know, with a late bloomer like yourself, or you started when you were like 19 years old or 20 years old, your style probably in the amateurs, I would assume, kind of threw a lot of guys off, right? You weren't really having like a, because there is sort of a typical amateur style. I don't know if you would agree with that.
I would, and I think for a big guy in three rounds, you know, amateurs just throw a lot of punches, and I think that's what I did. I certainly got hit a lot. I always got hit a lot, but throw a lot of punches. And for those three-round fights, I was good at that, and just kind of not really stop. And I could, you know, I could take a beating. You know, some people might question my chin, but I could certainly take a beating or get up. So I'm not crediting myself too much. I got hit a lot in my career, but I think that's just what I credit to. And it's funny, I speak to school. I just spoke to a school last week. I speak to a lot of schools locally and try to motivate some children. And you know, basically the theme of it is, you know, everybody has talent. Don't ever be afraid of talent. You know, I fear work ethic, and that's what I have. And that's what I love. Mm-hmm. And that's what you should fear is if you're competing against someone, whether it's for a test or sales or athletics or whatever it is, you know, you should fear work, you know, people with work ethic, not talent, because talent really, everybody's got a talent. I fear somebody that works hard and believes in themselves. So that I had, you know, the talent came like third or fourth on the list.
It reminds me of, you know, a lot of fighters talk about that. Like even Conor McGregor, I think, has like a quote about that. Like, he's not talented, he's obsessed. And there, you know, that mentality, I think, is so true. So, yeah, I mean, I'm with you on that 100%. Mm-hmm. I got to ask too, in the background, are those some of your trophies or
something? I am in my office.
Seeing, memorabilia up there. Nice.
A couple of belts and some trophies and stuff, and the kids love it. But yeah, just some of the stuff that I'm capable of showcasing to be proud of.
Yeah, that's awesome. With the Olympic trials too, you know, Mayweather being a part of that, or that team as well. I was kind of curious, you know, if you had any kind of stories around Floyd and what he was like at that point in his career.
I just stumbled across a picture of he and I from 1996. I think we were in Oregon. It was a fun summer. I mean, we spent almost 3 months together, the Olympians and the Olympic alternates. So that'd be 24 athletes. And we get to spend almost 3 months together. And there are a lot of stories, some of which I could share, some probably not. But it was I grew up that summer. It was a really fun summer. I remember Mayweather and, gosh, Fernando Fargas and Nate Jones and Deverell Williamson and myself and Lawrence Clabe. We really became good friends. It was a great camaraderie. And we went to Sweden and Finland and England, and it was a lot of travel, but it was a lot of fun and probably one of the most memorable summers of my life. And even just to call myself part of that team and be associated with guys that, I mean, even then I looked up to those guys. I was really the new guy on the scene, kind of the guy that didn't belong in the group. Even to the point where I kind of just shared the story recently, like Deverell Williamson and I became close. Like, he kind of brought me up, man. Deverell was a guy who's been around the amateurs a long time. And I remember being on the national team before the Olympics, and he taught me how to travel and he was my sparring partner. He used to beat me up all the time. I mean, he was my guy I looked up to. And it's so funny to fast forward to my career and now the crowds here in Buffalo later on, and now becoming a contender in the pro ranks. They said, "Would you fight Deverell?" And I loved that fight. And I can imagine when they offered Deverell, and I love Deverell Williamson, I can imagine what he thought and said, "Yeah, I'd love to fight Macy. My God, I feel like I raised this kid. I used to beat him up sparring. I would love to take that fight in Buffalo, no less." So it's one of my better, not just better performances because it was a quick knockout, but one of my most proud wins because, again, it was against a guy that I had looked up to so much. But I kind of realized that because of my trainers, I'm not crediting myself, my trainers, they changed. I was a different person and fighter that Deverell remembered. And I have to say that about myself. I improved every few fights, whereas a lot of the guys I fought in the past, you know, the Robert Davises and guys like that, not saying they weren't good, they were great fighters, but they're the same guys I fought as an amateur that when I fought them as a pro.
Right.
I felt like I kept learning a little bit. I had to. I had nowhere to go. I didn't know much. So I just kept learning a little bit because of my trainers. So that's why I was so excited to take that fight and prove to him what a different fighter I was than the guy he remembered years earlier. So that's why I think it was kind of a good big win for me. But he's the one that brought me up as an amateur.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me of the other day I was watching the HBO documentary, What's My Name, on Ali. Mm-hmm. And it kind of draws it's unbelievable. But some parallels there between Ali and Larry Holmes. Like, obviously different circumstances. Sure. Ali was way past his prime. But sure, all those sparring sessions that they used to have together, and Holmes was like his like little brother almost, like in sparring, and he was like, "There's no way Holmes can beat me, you know, like there's too many rounds where I've been with him in camp and stuff," and then Holmes put a beating on him. But
And sparring is, you might get excited about sparring and you're doing so well. It's just a different animal. It is not the fight, you know. Sparred lots of guys that I did well against, and in the fight, it's a different game, you know. So
definitely.
Yeah.
So also, I wanted to touch on, like, obviously there are so many people in Buffalo that rally behind you, and, like, you know, you were referred to as the third professional sports team in Buffalo, like the Sabres, Bills, and you. So, you know, that must have been an awesome feeling to have the whole city behind you and, like, all those fans. And you're still in Buffalo, right?
I still live in Buffalo, yeah. Yeah. It's great, you know. I was recently inducted this year into the Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame, and it was a great honor.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I had said during my speech that, you know, this is a great city. It really is. It takes its hits, but the people here are great. And I say that, and what I mean by I say that is I could have been born and raised in Houston or Vegas or Miami or California – And maybe I would have been 36-0. Maybe I would have been undefeated. Maybe I would have been a decent fighter still. But I never in those cities would have drawn 18,000 people. Same fighter, but the draw and the popularity came from the town, came from the people. It didn't come from me. Buffalo is a small city, but it is a huge sports town. Huge. People here are from here. And when they, you know, they're heartbroken over the Bills all those years ago, and the Sabres came close so many times. We've never had a championship team. So for me, it wasn't even boxing. It wasn't even, it could have been badminton. It didn't even matter. They just came to support a Buffalonian doing something. So that's why I will always appreciate the people of this city. And I love to travel and travel the world, but this will always be my home because of that reason. I just think the people here, and to this day, I mean, I have not been on top for 15 years, but I was pumping gas this morning and the guy's like, "Baby Joe, hey man, how are you? Miss it?" And you know, like everywhere I go still. So it's just a wonderful place. These people really rally around themselves and rally around their own people.
Oh, definitely. It's like some of the best fans in all of sports, like obviously with Bills Mafia and like all the
All you gotta do is watch a YouTube of a Bills tailgate and see what these fans, how serious they are, you know. So it's great for that reason, you know.
Yeah, 100%. I know the coronavirus obviously is putting kind of a halt on everything, but wanted to ask if you had any early predictions for the Bills once they get rolling.
I'm just saying playoffs. I think we'll make the playoffs. I mean, I don't know about much further than that. I still think we have a lot more work to do, a lot more areas to strengthen. But we are the most optimistic we've been in years, you know? So that's kind of exciting. You know, we love our quarterback and it's just going to be a tough AFC league this year. So, but I'm optimistic. I think at least playoffs.
Yeah, no, I think
we get excited over that.
Hey, it's going to be an interesting division with Brady gone and all new now. So, yeah, it'll be good.
I don't think Brady's gonna be enough to make the Tampa Bay that good. But I love Brady, but I don't think one guy's gonna do it. I don't know if it was a great move. Probably should have just retired.
I know. It was kind of a shame to see him put a different jersey on. Honestly, it's just like it's not looking right. But
yeah, but I get it too.
Yeah, he's getting paid well, so I can't blame him.
Right.
Yeah. So also let's touch on some heavyweights today. You know, obviously there's so much action going on in that division and we're just coming off of the Wilder Fury rematch. So, you know, I'd love to get your sort of recap of that and your thoughts on that fight. And then, you know, there's a few others I'd like to talk about too, but first like Wilder Fury.
Yeah. I go to Vegas a few times a year for work. I'm in medical sales now, but I ran into Wilder at the mall shopping. We had to take some pictures together and talk a bit. And I love both these guys. And I love them just because they bring in great energy to the heavyweight division at a perfect time when it needs it, kind of. Because, unfortunately, they're the only two guys that are bringing energy and the only two guys I want to see. I think a third fight is what we want to see, obviously. I don't care if it's a fourth and fifth fight, because right now there isn't a list of really exciting heavyweights. And I love both these guys. They obviously have a respect for each other, but they're great at press conferences and they're good matchups and they're both big. So I think they should fight three more times if they're both willing, because that is what the division is looking for. That's what the division needs. And they're good fights. So yeah. I mean, I think it's the best thing going for the heavyweight division right now is having a Tyson Fury competition.
What do you think? Like, what was your reaction to Fury walking Wilder down the way he did? Like, he told everyone he was going to do it. Like, no one really believed him, but that Kronk, new Kronk style where he just walked Wilder down and, you know, dominated him right from the opening bell. He marched right forward. Like, was that shocking to you, or were you kind of expecting Fury to?
I was a little shocked. Wilder, I would go
in agreement with him that he probably wasn't 100%. I would go into agreement that one of those early punches, whether caught back of the head or not, really, it just hurt him. But I'm not that surprised. You know, if you think about the first fight, except for maybe three rounds, I mean, Fury has won every round except for like three.
Mm-hmm.
And when I can understand it. I was doing an interview recently and I was trying to explain the difference. When I look at a Wilder and a Fury, and I could just see, all I can do is envision myself against somebody like that. I mean, I'd fight Wilder every day of the week over Fury. And I'm not saying I'd enjoy either one of them. They'd probably both put me in the third row. But I'm just saying, if I had to choose, I would choose Wilder. Wilder, all the assets and strengths and tools he has, he's still orthodox. Versus a Fury, all the strengths and assets he has, he's by no means orthodox by any way you look at it. He's going to throw, he doesn't even know what he's going to do. I mean, he's so, I wouldn't even know sometimes, it's not because he's super fast. I don't know what it is. He's awkward to every extent of the word. And tough, what we were just talking about earlier. He's got all that.
Yeah.
The will to win and all that, that's the most fearful because he's going to do what it takes. But stylistically speaking, my gosh, I'd choose Wilder. And it's an easy pick. Not saying either one's going to be easy, again, but Fury is going to make you work hard. If you were even to win, you'd look terrible doing it. You're not going to look good.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a challenging, difficult fight. I've been saying that since he was a young prospect. I mean, this guy, if he makes it, no one's going to want to fight him because he's so darn strange and awkward in there. And I don't even know where he's going to come next.
Do you think a matchup with Fury and Joshua would be a like easy win for Fury? Or do you think Joshua is a guy that could step in? And my opinion is I think Wilder and Fury are their two best in the heavyweight division, and Joshua is probably the third. However, a lot of people think that Joshua is number one, or, you know,
he's man. I love Joshua. The guy's got this amazing physique and a gentleman that he is, but
yeah, he looks like Hercules.
Yeah. You're going to think Fury's going to come in the way he's been looking and just dominate Joshua. But here's what I wonder about Joshua. I still want to see more. He scares me in the sense, I think he shows up. If he's got really tough competition, he's going to show up. Or maybe he doesn't show up if he's not tested. You know, like he'll just, you know, so I don't know what to expect. I wouldn't know what to anticipate with him because maybe he doesn't, like, train hard for a fight that he thinks might be easier. If he's not pushed real hard, he doesn't give it his all. I don't know. That's what I'm kind of thinking in the back of my mind. But yet he still concerns me and worries me, again, thinking of me against him. But again, if I had to pick all three of those guys, I'd pick Joshua first. I feel like he doesn't have as much as a great representative of the heavyweight division as he might be. I don't see the tools and resources in his bag in the ring that the other two guys have, you know?
Yep. Did you agree with the stoppage of the Wilder-Fury matchup?
You know, it's tough being a referee and looking at it, and having said that, I would have let it go in another minute, but I don't think anyone was arguing it. I think I don't think Wilder to this day, I mean, he was hurt. I think he was confused and hurt, and having had the injury that I had and kind of know more about it these days, no harm in stopping it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. I think it was the right call. I mean, it just seemed like he, like you mentioned early on, his balance or something was off early, and he never really was able to recover from it. So it didn't even seem like, we all know that Wilder has that one punch power, but it didn't even seem like he had that available to him pretty much like a minute into the fight after he got clipped behind the ear. It just seemed like he was off.
I had never said this to anyone, but like I think like those shots are tough. I've been hit with a lot of those. In fact, that is the exact shot Jiroff hit me with. Is it illegal? I never complained. I don't know. It's probably borderline illegal. All I know is you get hit in that spot in the right way causes mass confusion, you know? Or like sometimes right. The bottom.
Yeah.
Sometimes you put your head down in the bottom of the glove, like the lace almost will scrape the back of the head. nothing illegal. It just happens, and it just kind of lightened your legs. And so that area of the head and brain could be, again, nothing was intentional about it, but they're two big guys. But, yeah, I don't think his legs were right after that first shot.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, you know, he was wobbled, and it was a good decision. But I'm glad that they did throw in the towel, and they ended it on his feet, because, you know, that third fight is still
very much
there for the fans. Like, the fans still want to see it. There's a lot of questions left.
I agree. That, and which also reminds me, I get asked often, a gentleman asked me not too long ago, he says, you know, I see him a lot in the hospitals. You know, I've been meaning to ask you, Joe. He says, you know, that fight where you got injured in Vegas, I think it was Giroff, he said, why, you know, when you think of things now, why didn't you just stay down? And because, he goes, because you would have gotten the loss. No one would have ever found out or known about your injury. It would have been swept. Like, you'd been fine. You could have come back months later, regained your feet, got a couple wins. You would have got your world title fight. I left the guy he kind of, after ruining my day a bit, I was like, you know, I mean, he's really got a point, you know. But I had to say, like, no, I mean, I'd rather be 36-0. And
right, yeah. And,
man, if there's one.
You're not going to think of all that.
Like, I mean, I gave it some thought. Don't get me wrong. I'm like, he's absolutely right. But, you know, and the one regret of mine is not getting a win or lose. I just want a title opportunity. I mean, three guys that I fought and beat got title opportunities. I just wanted a title opportunity. I didn't get. But having said that, you know, I could say this to the kids at school. I mean, if you got a chance to get up in your life, you got to stand up. And that's what I'm most proud of my career. And I could have easily been stopped that fight. I have no memory of that fight. And I'm just not going to. That's a little bit of inclination and a little bit of strength and heart and soul that I have that I'm going to get up. So I try to instill that in the people I'm talking to. You got to get up. So, you know, deal with it later, the other things you might regret.
Yeah. Was that definitely the most severe fight in terms of, you know, damage or not remembering that sort of thing later in your career?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have no health repercussions at all. I'm totally healthy and fine. But, you know, we've all been hurt in the ring. We've all been confused or concussed. Talking about that Giroff fight, it was days later. I'm back in Buffalo, and I said, you know, this is a little different. I'm still foggy. It's been a week, you know. So we went to our personal doctor, and we're diagnosed. So that was still a little different, you know.
Yeah, I mean, once you know, it's obviously very unfortunate that happened. But at the end of the day, like, you know, nothing catastrophic happened, and everything's all good. So
I'm very blessed. I'm very blessed that the boxing gave me what it gave me, and I traveled the world and got to meet such great people, and it brought me to this beautiful home with three great kids and this beautiful career that I have and great memories. So I have no ill wishes or regrets, and it happened, and God had a path for me, and this is the path I'm on. Having said all that, and becoming not a physician by any means, but becoming a little more of an expert on subdural hematomas, some of the rules and regulations need to be changed, because any boxer that was at my level, undefeated, not undefeated, in the ranks, top 10, has had a subdural hematoma. I mean, it's basically factual. So, if they find out about it, you're banned from the sport. But to keep fighters and athletes safe, then more testing needs to be done. Because had I not been tested, and I fought Mike Tyson 60 days later like I was supposed to, or Klitschko, or whoever I was going to fight, maybe my story would have been different. So I just think more testing needs to be done. Because if you think more subdural hematomas are not happening in boxing, it's quite possible Wilder had one. I mean, I doubt he went and got an MRI. But it's a very, very common injury that happens when you're in the sport of boxing. So I don't think that rule should be as black and white as it is.
Right.
You know? Yeah. But anyway, that's my thought and opinion.
Yeah, no, I mean, you got to look out for the fighters. Like, obviously that's, you know, the NFL is trying to make measures to make head trauma safer. And like with boxing, you know, in the recent, even past year or so, there's been, you know, multiple deaths very close together, which have been terrible. And then like, it's harsh to say, like, it is kind of part of this, like, it'll probably always happen. It's hard to avoid it. It's just like, there's so many fights that go on over the course of the year. It's, you know, it's a really difficult kind of topic to fix, but
it's very difficult. We don't want to stop sports. I love sports. I love football. Right. But we do want to make it as safe as possible now that we have the knowledge we have. And I'm an advocate for safety, and I love the sport of boxing. And listen, I was an advocate to legalize MMA fighting in New York. I'm not even an MMA fan, but New York is always the last state to grant licenses for anything.
Yeah.
And but I supported it because it'll help the economy. People would love to go to hotels and restaurants and love to see these fights in upstate Buffalo, Syracuse, whether it's downstate or whatever. And they questioned me, well, you're a boxer with a head injury. Don't you have concerns? And my opinion is no, because one, I'm thinking about the economy, and I think that it's regulated greatly. And I think it's much safer than boxing. Less deaths happen in MMA than they do boxing. So I think it's safer than boxing. It's more violent, but violence and safety are two different categories. So, I think hopefully that helped get the legalization here, because I'm doing it in New York. So, I'm a big fan of MMA now because of that.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, it's interesting. The only big obvious factor for me in terms of safety, that should change in boxing, and it's definitely a big problem in MMA, is the weight cutting. There's guys dropping huge amounts of weight the night before the fight for the weigh-in, like up to 30 pounds some guys have reported. I'm sure you've been around it through your years in the sport, and that lack of hydration for the night of the fight is just really dangerous. So I hope that they figure something out there to try to prevent that. There's some guys that are starting to fight more at their natural weight, Canelo, moving up, and
yeah.
So that's good to see. I hope more guys start to do stuff like that.
Yeah. Maybe weigh in the day of the fight. I'm not sure, but yeah, the fluid around the brain is less and less, and that's where, when there's less fluid and less space for the brain to move, and that's where the injuries take place. So a lot of it has to do with the weight cutting. You're right.
Yeah. And in the heavyweight division, there's another guy from our last conversation months ago, that has been out of the picture, but, should be, kind of emerging back in, is, Jarrell Big Baby Miller. Obviously had some issues with drug testing, and, he had some big mess ups on his part on that. But the thing I remember you talking about was, his ability and what he could do in the division, basically if he stays out of trouble. Do you still think that he might be able to?
I've gotten to see him fight a couple times here locally. He fought at the New York Niagara Falls Seneca Casino a couple times on his way up, and got to meet him. And it's funny, I think he's incredibly skillful. He's got very accurate punching power, very accurate punches. He reminds me, and I might have said this before, of Lawrence Clabe. And a lot of people might not remember Lawrence Clabe, but I remembered him because he knocked me out. So, but he was an incredible athlete, Lawrence Clabe, when he came ready. And when I look at this Big Baby Miller, if he's going to continue to think he's going to win a world title at 290 pounds or 300 pounds, he's not, because when you look at his frame, he's a 240 easily. I don't know what he's doing, whether it is the drugs or lack of cardio or whatever, but if this guy came out and threw 60, 70 punches around, I don't think anyone's going to beat him. But even when I saw him here, he was like 260, and I said, I remember seeing my dad. I'm no expert, but man, if this guy was down 25 pounds, I mean, he's only throwing like 28, 30 punches around. They're all landing, but he's like not doing enough,
Mm-hmm.
He's very good, and he's good for the camera because he talks a good game. He's witty, so he's got it, man. But it'd be a shame to see him come into the ring being a top contender, whether it's for a world title or not, 280 or above. It'd be sad. You know, because you're not, something's been missed. Eating too much, not training, not drugs. I don't know what he's doing, but if that guy came ready, if he was ever a lean 235, oh my God, he'd be scary.
Yeah. It's kind of the same thing with Andy Ruiz, like when he came back for the Joshua rematch and he weighed 275, like he put on like 20 pounds or something and, you know, clearly was partying and enjoying the spoils of victory, which, you know, I can't blame him for enjoying it. Like he accomplished his goal of getting to the heavyweight championship, winning and, you know, getting all that money. But it's like, man, that was disappointing, you know, to see him come in the rematch that out of shape and really kind of squander that opportunity to have like generational wealth for, you know, his family. It's just like, man, I hope he can come back. He's probably going to have a tough fight ahead of him. I know they're rumoring him versus Dillian White. And I think both of those guys, they got to win their next fight. So someone's getting stopped in that matchup, I think.
Shoot. I mean, I'm 260 pounds. I'd fight Dillian White. I'm 46 years old. I don't feel, you know.
You're not scared of the left hook?
Yeah, he's got some tools, but I just don't. Of the three guys you mentioned, Joshua and Fury and Wilder, that's the thing about the division. We could talk about other guys down the list, and I'll give my opinion, but that's all there is, man. There's the three guys you want to talk about. There's the three guys you want to see. Those three guys got to interact with each other, continue to want to fight each other. If Andy wants to get in shape, he can get in that mix, but no one else deserves to. And that's what I'm saying about Big Baby Miller. Get ready, because you'll be in this conversation too and in that mix. But right now, and hearing about the drug use and disobeying the rules and not coming ready, I mean, you only want to see him come ready. And but those guys could be in that discussion, but you know, they still got something to prove.
Have you seen Usyk at all coming up from cruiserweight? I mean, he's looking to fight Chisora next, which would be a big test for.
That's a good test. That's a great test, and he's great. He's like, now. I mean, he's a smaller heavyweight. Looking at all those guys we just mentioned.
Yeah,
I can't even see him standing next to those guys. But look at speed wins fights, man. You know, speed wins fights. Everybody's strong, so I think speed and the ability to confuse somebody, and he has that. So he's someone to keep your eye on. Yeah,
yeah, that's an interesting matchup. I'm excited for that because Chisora, he's like you know, he's a fan favorite. He comes right forward and looks for that out. So that's a tough task for Usyk in his early beginning in the heavyweight division.
Mm-hmm. That is. It's a real good fight. It's a real good fight. And I'm always a big fan of the cruiserweights that come up to heavyweight that are ready. You know, the Holyfields that do it. And, you know, Juroff tried it, but
David Hay.
They have an advantage because I'm a huge speed guy. Speed wins fights, and they've got that advantage. So, strength doesn't win fights. Power, everyone in the heavyweight division is strong and powerful. I mean, speed wins it. Speed and agility and ability. And sometimes those cruiserweights are really sneak up on me and they have it, you know?
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah. I'd rather fight a strong guy than a fast guy, you know?
Yeah. And the thing is with the heavyweights now with Fury, I mean, the way Fury moves defensively too, I mean, it's really almost strange to watch. Like he moves like a middleweight.
Yeah, he does. He moves great for a big guy. Moves awkwardly. It isn't pretty. He doesn't move like Floyd. I mean, he does it, you know, hands down. I mean, he defies the rules, you know, like whatever a trainer teaches you, the basics, he's not doing any of that. And I told to a lot of people, I remember the night of the fight, like, I don't even know. You could watch a guy boxing small or big and say, man, here's what I think I would do. And I don't even know where to begin. It confuses me that much. I'm a little bit of a student of the game. I didn't apply it so much in the ring, but I have great capability of witnessing things and calling it out. That's why I like to do a little broadcasting. And I love to be a great student of the game. I wish I did those things in the ring because I didn't. But I have a great way of identifying it. And I don't even know where to start with Fury. I mean, he's that. And the word isn't even impressive because it looks like I could think of five things he does wrong, flat out wrong. but they work great for him. And you got to love him and respect him for it, because with his hands down, his back against the ropes, and his footwork, is he crosses his feet where you're not supposed to do that. And it's all working for him, and it's confusing his opponents. And God bless him, because I love the guy.
Yeah, no, he's great for the sport. He's a great personality and obviously a tremendous fighter. So, you know, a lot of new eyeballs on the sport for that Fury Wilder matchup. So it's great. You know, once things get back in the swing of things, I think the trilogy will be even bigger.
I do too.
I want to tune in.
I do too. And you can never, you know, let your guard down with Wilder. I mean, would you be surprised if Wilder came out and knocked him out in Fury in the fourth round? It's not like I'd say we'd be shocked, because he's that strong. So that's why it's exciting. That's why it's exciting, and that's a fight you want to see. You know, if Fury comes out and wins again, well, that's that. We answered our questions. But
yeah, we
still hang our hat on Wilder, because then he is good and he's strong and he has that capability. And this second fight, yeah, he lost. Give him Fury the credit, but maybe the stunt wasn't right or we got hit in the back, whatever the reason was, and I'm going to give him that next opportunity, and I want to see the third fight, you know?
Yeah, 100%. What's your prediction for that? I know they're going to do it as soon as possible, really. I mean, they were going to do it maybe in September if this flu stuff wasn't going on. So
that's a tough one. I think, you know, they both have something to prove. I mean, Fury wants – I mean, they both have something to prove. So I would imagine this one will go the distance, which I would hope it would, and see a great fight. And I would hope they'll make the right call at the end, which could stretch this thing out and give this next one to Wilder. You know what I mean? So I don't put my faith in the judges these days. There's too many weird things happen at the end of the fight. But I would imagine it would go the distance with Fury deserving the win. But you never know.
You never know.
You never know. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of, you know, fun stuff on the horizon. Continue to stay safe, and we'll everybody get through this, and, you know, make sure to let people know. I know you got Instagram now, and we can give you a shout out and tell people to, I know.
I'm relatively new to social media. You know, it's funny that social media would have been so great in my era to help, what a free way to help market and promote yourself. But, now that I have a teenage daughter, I'm getting more and more into social media. But, and I would have liked it now. So I'll give you a little, not so much breaking news because of the virus and all that. I have obviously been distanced from boxing since, 2006 or 2007, kind of happily. Now, don't get me wrong. I fall asleep watching the sport 3 nights a week, and I love the sport. But I'm often asked, why don't I train? Why don't I have a gym locally? Why don't I manage fighters? Why am I not more involved? Why don't I broadcast? And that, there isn't an answer to it. I love the sport. The business, I don't know if I love it. I love the sport. So here's my son, baby Joseph.
All good.
Anyway, so you can take that. So, but it hasn't been until recently. And I don't want to say I have an itch or an urge to box. I certainly don't. I'm 46. But I imagine myself, if I am involved in this business, it would be in the promotional level, in the business level, marketing level, sponsorship. So just recently, before the virus, it's obviously on hold now. If I did get involved in promoting, it'd have to be with the right people. I get asked all the time, well, why don't you have a Buffalo Convention Center and showcase some of the local talent and promote? I go, well, that doesn't really interest me. But to bring national TV to Buffalo, New York, that would interest me. To do it with the right people, that would interest me. So recently I was approached by Pegulas, who now own Buffalo Bills and Buffalo Sabres, who have a big staple and revived this city, about doing some professional boxing. I said, well, I would only do it with the right person. And that person was Tony Holden. And Tony Holden was my promoter, and he's still doing a lot of promotions with Bob Arum and Lou DiBella. And so I contacted Tony, and we've been meeting with Pegula Sports, and we might do some world-class boxing here in Buffalo on ESPN.
Wow.
ESPN has taken over boxing now. There's no boxing on HBO. I mean, these aren't the ESPN Friday night fights. These ESPN broadcasts are really awesome. And
yeah,
we're talking about awesome. Two world title fights, and we're going to test out the market here in Buffalo again. We've got a beautiful arena right across from the arena I fought in where the Sabres play. It's now called the Harbor Center. It's the hockey mecca. It holds about 3,000 to 4,000 people. It's a beautiful bowl-shaped area where all of the great hockey teams now play. Hockey's a big Buffalo's a big hockey town.
Yeah.
But downtown Buffalo is not the Buffalo that maybe people remember from my era. It is a revived. It's beautiful on the waterfront, and it's a great place to showcase and have some fights because these people are hungry for boxing again. So to give you guys a little news, I'm back in it, and I'm thinking hopefully before the end of the year we're gonna have a few ESPN world title fights here in Buffalo with Tony Holden and the Pagulas. So that's what we're
doing. Wow, breaking news.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So it's kind of exciting. And so I'm really, really kind of excited to be back involved again, working with ESPN and trying to get this off the ground. But obviously we've got a few things in front of us in the way we've got to get through. But so hopefully we'll be talking more to help promote those shows.
Yeah, no, I'd love that. That's unbelievable. Congratulations, you know, bringing boxing back to Buffalo, and you're the perfect guy to do it. So that's going to be an awesome production.
It will be. ESPN, I mentioned, but we've been thinking about Buffalo. We love that market. They thought it was great right away. So I think that, you know, with 4,000 people live and get a couple world title fights, showcase some local talent, I think it's a great place to have some world championship boxing.
100%. Yeah, I'm 100% with you on that. Bills Mafia, I'm sure you get those guys down there for the fight.
I'm sure.
I'm sure. It'll be electric.
Yeah, I've already talked to a few of them. It'll be fun.
That's awesome. Congrats on that. So everyone, make sure to keep an eye on that. I'll stay in touch with you. I'd love to talk more about that once it starts getting going. But thanks a lot for spending some time to talk with me today. I had some fun hearing some of those old stories.
Yeah.
We'll definitely do it again. So look out for this episode dropping very soon.
It's my pleasure. Let's stay in touch. We'll talk about those shows and any other old school stories, okay?
Awesome. I appreciate it. Thanks, Joe.
Pat, thank you. Everyone stay healthy.
Appreciate it.